Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Beach Pass, this is Toronto FC, Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue, Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you, Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, or Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Is it time for another Pitch Pass already? You're damn right it is. Thank you so much for downloading it. PitchPass.com. For more information on the show, you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at Pitch Pass. Well, it's been an interesting week for MLS, even without the matches. So let's get in two people who can talk about the news that have happened over the course of the last week, and a guy who has been in the news over the course of the last week. Later on, we'll talk with Sports Illustrated's Brian Strauss. He'll get us a little bit of recap, very little bit of a recap on the latest matches from the U.S. Men's National Team. We'll also talk MLS expansion with him, with the addition of Orlando City, the rumors about Miami and David Beckham, and more. We'll also talk a little bit about playoffs and playoff structure for MLS. We are in the middle of an extended break in our MLS playoffs. But first, we talk to a man who was just announced with a new position. He's leaving DC United. He's moving to Columbus Crew to be one of the assistant coaches under Greg Berhalter. His name, Josh Wolf, and he joins us right now on Pitch Pass. Josh, good to talk to you again. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Congratulations on the gig.
Thank you. I appreciate it. A lot of work ahead, but looking forward to it.
I saw the promotional shot that came out of you today at Crew Stadium with your new black and gold scarf. Although not looking at the camera, you went a little whimsical for your promo shot.
No, I'm not sure how it came out. That wouldn't be up to me. The guys with the cameras would be. There were a few guys out there with cameras, so maybe they got a couple different angles.
I like to think that a Josh Wolf though does take directions in a modeling shoot. And if somebody said, "Hey, look off camera, like just look out into the distance and give me some smoldering eyes," and you were able to just do that.
Yeah, I was right on cue for those guys. I appreciate your encouragement on that one.
Tell us how this went down, because to the outsider, it all happened kind of quickly. One minute you're an assistant coach for DC United. The next minute, the announcement's made that you are now an assistant under Greg Berhalter at Columbus Crew. So how long did this process take, and who reached out to who?
It did happen rather quickly. I was on a scouting trip in Honduras, and after I got back from that, maybe about 10 days ago, I had some emails mentioning that Greg wanted to reach out and talk about of an assistant coach at Columbus. He was obviously named the head coach. So when I got back, I saw that. And at that point, the next day or so, we were able to speak over the phone and kind of go over some things. And, yeah, things kind of moved rather quickly in the next few days, and spoke to Benny about it and kind of the direction that I wanted to go. And at that point, things just, you know, as you said, they kind of move rather quickly, and you just start preparing for the next, for the next step.
Well, before I ask you what you specifically liked about the Columbus position, is this a matter of moving up a little further on the bench? Was that the main reason why this was an attractive job to you?
It's attractive for a variety of reasons. I can't say there was just one reason. Where you sit on the bench is, whether or not your ego is in place is relevant or irrelevant. For me, it was the idea of what Greg and the Columbus Crew are looking to do going forward, the direction of the club, the direction of Greg, my ability to hopefully be part of that building process and help put together a program that's gonna resonate with the fans and be be competitive as soon as possible.
Okay, well then let me turn the question and ask you in a different way.
Sure.
Obviously, you haven't done any actual work with Columbus yet, or have you? It's only been a day, but what do you see your duties being at Columbus different than what your duties were at DC United?
I'm not sure. At that point, we'll sit down and go over everything that's going to be laid out moving ahead. I think initially the idea for me is to work with the offensive. The offensive setup, the ideas of how we want to attack, how Greg wants to build his team with character and quality. But now, for me, having a watchful eye on how we construct plays, how we finish off plays, and me being a forward, that's kind of what my job will lend to those things, is being something that can help educate, teach, and hopefully lend some options for guys as far as how they play the position and what they look to do.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you think you could have continued to grow at DC United as a guy who had played, done the player coach thing and as a coach thing? Did you feel like maybe that was a bit of a ceiling as far as really putting on and becoming a coach and now having this fresh start with a team that never knew you as a teammate? Was that something that was important to you at all?
Again, I wouldn't say that was any one thing that made me say this was the opportunity, the reason that this opportunity made sense to me. It was a lot of things that go into it, and for me, it was just something where I'm at in this position in my career, and the opportunity that is presented. I felt like it was something that made a lot of sense. I'm not saying that there were any ceilings in DC or anything of that nature, but you got to continue to evolve and continue to challenge yourself. Going forward, I look forward to those options and opportunities with the Columbus crew. And obviously, got some good to see and have a lot of respect for the staff and the players and the organization, and wish them nothing but the best going forward. But the decision didn't come easy. It took some thought and time, and again, the direction and the landscape that's been discussed and I was able to carry out with Greg and talk over the phone about was what sounded most appealing to me. It's going to take a lot of work and time, but I look forward to it.
I apologize for all of the questions about this, Josh, but as a DC United fan, I'm taking a little hard that one of our own is walking out the door. So I'm actually a little sad that you're leaving DC, Josh.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm sad to leave DC. Again, those are some good friends, good teammates, certainly a lot of good character organization. So it's part of the business, obviously. I gave it a lot of thought and it's those guys well, and it's on to the next challenge.
And I'll ask you one last thing before we move into your current position, and that would be the United has a lot of things that can change for them this off season. A lot of different options for them to improve on. What do you think the most important thing they need to be right on is? Is it the first pick in the draft? Is it the allocation money dispersal? Is it the re-entry? What do you think the one thing they need to be right on is?
I don't think there's one thing. I think, again, you just mentioned that they have a number of mechanisms that are there at their disposal that could be very beneficial. I think it's important to get all of them right. Whether it's a success or not may take time to see down the road, but again, they have a great opportunity to add some pieces that maybe weren't there last year. And in doing that, you have to be diligent. You have to be assertive of what you need and what you're looking for. And again, I fully believe that, with those things in place, there'll be a very competitive side going forward.
All right, let's talk about Columbus. For me, as an MLS fan, it's an exciting thing happening in Columbus, a team, a city, a franchise that kind of floats along usually, but with new ownership in place, a new coach in place, talk of a rebrand somewhere down the road. Columbus is an exciting prospects for the future. That had to be something that weighed into your mind and something that you thought about wanting to be a part of as you took this job.
Yeah, and again, you take into account everything, the pros and cons of every situation, and that's one of them. Obviously, as you mentioned, there's talk of a rebrand down the road. You have new owners with a freshness, an excited fan base. You have an excited front office, and in all honesty, they're looking for new direction as well, and I think they've found it, and now you concentrate over the coming months and try to put it together as quickly as you can, but know that it does take time to get all the pieces in place. But there's no reason there can't be success there soon. But the work is going to be plentiful.
One of the things that we hear about when we think of Greg Berhalter as he took the position was he's big into analytics. He's, you know, for lack of a better word, the first sabermetric MLS coach that we've heard about. First of all, have you seen that in talking with him? And if you have, what does that kind of translate to as it pertains to his coaching style?
I think it just lends to the idea that he's very detailed, very thorough. Again, I think those mechanisms and those ideas are there to be used. I think all teams have them at their disposal to some degree. You have to decipher it and digest the information and try to utilize it to benefit your group. And I think, you know, when it's said that he's very analytical, I think, you know, it's part of what he wants to utilize in getting a group to be as efficient as possible. And again, I think you want to use every resource that's at your disposal. This is one that's certainly very current and relevant and kind of a hot topic. And it's one avenue, but there are many avenues. And again, you have to be very constructive, very goal oriented with your group. And there'll be plenty of things that that's presented before the team to try and encourage them and make them better. But this is one aspect.
You guys spent some time together with the national team. You guys spent some time together when you both played in Munich. When you guys were players, did you ever talk about a moment where one or both of you would be in coaching and thought to yourself, oh, this is somebody that I definitely could work with. This I like this person's ideas when you guys were playing?
Well, I think we had constructive conversations throughout. You know, I think as a player over the course of the national team, over the course of playing in Germany, and even his time back here, there were plenty of conversations about what we believe the game to look like, the way you go about it. But, you know, I think there's a genuine respect for one another, and hopefully that lends to some good conversation and making one another better. But it's challenging. Coaching's challenging. There's a lot of ideas that go into it, a lot of opinions, and you got to be strong and forthright with what you believe in. And again, that's one of the strongest traits that Greg possesses. And again, look forward to being a part of that.
At what point in your playing career did you start thinking seriously about coaching? Like was it, you know, you and Greg talking on the training ground about things and walking away and probably thinking nothing of it? At what point did it actually go, wait a second, these kind of ideas that I'm kicking around are the seeds of maybe a coaching career? At what point did that happen in your career?
I think it struck me more when I came back from Germany. I just think there was more of a presence of the tactics and the detail that goes into to being part of a group. And maybe it was because I didn't speak the language, so you had to be very aware of the positioning and the habits of your players. And it might have just been as I matured more, it became more relevant and you really tuned into those things. But, you know, I think that and coming back to league and, you know, being in some situations, obviously in Kansas City and then in D.C., it gave me an opportunity to start exploring some of that. And I got that opportunity with Benny and Dave in D.C. And, again, I've enjoyed it very much. So I look forward to the future as well.
To me, Anthony Precourt taking over, buying Columbus, and then the kind of dynamic nature that he's brought to the city as an outsider, it feels exciting. In your conversations with him, does that excitement come across?
I got here last night. I haven't really had any conversations with too many people except, you know, Greg and some of the front office guys. But again, I have watched, I have listened, I have read. And yeah, there's reason to be excited. He comes with an idea, a vision, some immediate goals, some long-term goals. And, you know, it's a challenging environment, but it's one that I think all parties that are part of it are very, you know, certainly excited about the idea of what it could look like down the road.
Now, that's interesting because basically you're saying you haven't spoken with him yet. So he has that kind of faith in Greg where it's, okay, this is the guy you want, sight unseen, let's bring him aboard. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's part of Greg's position, part of his role with the crew now. And, you know, and again, I think it lends to the idea of what Greg's trying to build and change the culture and the dynamic of the crew from a soccer sense, and he certainly has that freedom to make those decisions.
We got Brian Strauss from Sports Illustrated coming on next. So as we wrap up with you, I'll ask you a question that we're going to get into in depth in the next segment, and that is MLS expansion. You're from Georgia. You know, the talk is that Atlanta is a front runner for a franchise. What kind of city do you think that would be for MLS? Taking, of course, into consideration your love for Atlanta.
Yeah, I think you've seen the growth of this league has been rapid and evolving in a nice way. So if they do get a team, I think it's a transient city, so you certainly got to tie into your fan bases and find a place that resonates with the fans, the crowd, the best, you know, just the best surroundings that you can find to have a nice competitive market. I think Atlanta could certainly be another destination for an MLS team. I've read some of the stories and, certainly some of the write-ups that have come out of it, and this league is gaining visibility and stability, so it'd be nice to see, in the right frame, it'd be nice to see another team come into the league as this league continues to grow.
Josh, congratulations on the gig. Best of luck to you for the offseason with Columbus. I know you got a lot of work to do, and good luck next season.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's Josh Wolf talking about his new position as assistant coach for Columbus Crew. Now, the last thing we asked him was about MLS expansion. That's all up in the news this week. We'll talk a lot about that. We'll also touch on the recent U.S. men's national team friendlies with Sports Illustrated's own Brian Strauss joins us right now. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I am doing well. I learned today that the MLS season is not over.
Oh, you did learn that. Okay, good. Because a lot of people forgot.
Rhythm, like I felt like we were done, and I was starting to sort of think about, you know, vacation and World Cup draw, and all of a sudden I realized there are more games this weekend.
You know, we just had Josh Wolf on, and I almost said best of luck to you in our off season, and then I'm like, wait a second, I really shouldn't say off season because the league is still actually playing games.
It is. Although that is very cool that you had him on. I did a fun story with him right before the Mexico game in Columbus, where we talked about his adventures against Mexico back in the first Dos a Zero game, I guess in 2001, and it was a lot of fun to reminisce with him about that night.
Now, at any point did he look around Crew Stadium and go, you know, this would be a good, cool place to work someday?
maybe he had to work there, so it makes sense. I like what they're doing. I think Greg Berhalter is a really interesting hire. I think it makes them interesting. You know, suddenly the Columbus Crew are interesting. I'm a big fan so far of what Anthony Precourt doing there since he took over.
It's very funny you say that, because that was the same exact thing that I said to Josh. Was this was a team that kind of always just flies in the middle of the pack. They never stink, but they're never really that great. I know they've got one MLS Cup under their belt, but they're always just a team that's there. But now they're one of the more exciting narratives or conversation points for MLS this offseason.
Well, they're starting to be, yeah, and I, with no disrespect to Frank Gallup and everything he's accomplished. I mean, he's obviously a very, very good coach. What team is more interesting, Chicago or Columbus?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Greg Berhalter and his experience in Europe and his background and all of the things that Precourt said about him when he was hired just makes this, like you said, it makes for an interesting narrative. And there's still a lot of work to do with that roster. But certainly Columbus is going to be a team to keep an eye on as Anthony Precourt sort of moves forward with a lot of his plans. He's already putting upgrades into the stadium. They're going to rebrand. There's a lot going on there that I think is going to change the perception of that club, and I think it's pretty cool.
You know, we were going to talk about expansion, but let's save that since you brought up we tongue-in-cheekily brought up the playoffs. I don't know if you read Washington Post Stephen Goff's column today about the playoffs. I know you have a lot of thoughts on playoff formats. We talked to Grant Wall last week, and you know, he gave you credit as the guy that kind of came up or I don't want to say spearheaded because it hasn't happened yet, that the Confederations Cup style round robin group stage for a playoff format. Something does need to be done, though, correct? We can't go a month with literally three matches happening, can we?
Well, first of all, I read everything that Stephen Goff writes. I don't have a career without Stephen Goff. So he is my mentor and my friend and the best there is. So, of course, okay, I don't read all of his college basketball stories. Take that back. I don't want to be quizzed. Yeah, I read it. I agree with a lot of it, not all of it. I think he's wrong about a couple things. But, yes, the gist is the schedule screwed up this year? Absolutely. I mean, it's to go 2 weeks – between the first leg of the conference semis and the second leg, and then another two, I'm sorry, the conference finals, and then another week before MLS Cup, simply destroys momentum. I mean, I've got to sort of re-engage. I've got to go and look and read about the first legs to sort of remember what the storylines and the trends were, who played and who did well. I mean, it just completely wrecks the momentum. It puts MLS on the back burner. And the problem is that some of it was avoidable and some of it wasn't. But either way, it gives ammunition to the, you know, the haters and the Euro posers and all of the people who think that MLS just botches everything they do when they get up in the morning and that playoffs are stupid. And it needlessly fuels some of the flames that sort of should have been snuffed out by now, if that makes sense. MLS knew that this weekend was coming. They knew it was possible that the U.S. could be involved in a World Cup qualifying playoff. There was no way that they could play playoff games this weekend. They should have adjusted for that earlier in the season. And as he said in his column, they missed the weekend between the second leg of the conference finals and MLS Cup.
Does it matter where it happened, or is it just a matter of this should have been resolved? We shouldn't be having this much of a break. And I bring that up. What if this 2-week break happened just at the end of the regular season, but before the playoffs start? Would that have helped at all, or is it just a matter of we couldn't have gotten to this point at all?
I think this November date typically is well, often is for friendlies, but I think this time, because it was a potential qualifying World Cup qualifying playoff that could have involved the U.S., they couldn't schedule games. So knowing that, I guess you then got to work backwards, right, and figure out a way to you know, if you cram in a couple more midweek regular season games during the season, a few in April or May or whatever, you could sort of move everything back by a week in order to make sure that the conference playoffs are finished with enough time to have that gap between the end of the conference finals and MLS Cup. So, but there are, again, I mean, everyone thinks they have a solution for MLS and schedule problems, and believe me, it's just incredibly complicated. The TV networks wield a lot of influence in terms of when games are played and where. MLS has, obviously several markets in winter they can't go too late or too early. And on top of that, an issue that I never see brought up, but that's important, is that you can't condense the regular season too much because a lot of teams don't make the playoffs. So you can't take all the teams that don't make the playoffs and say, okay, you have a 7-month season, because that's just too short. So you've got to schedule in a way that allows, that the playoffs make sense, but that also creates a genuine, valid, reasonable regulation length season for all the clubs that don't make it. So there's a huge balancing act. It's very difficult. I don't think people appreciate how difficult it is. But yeah, this time they botched it. This time they should have figured out a way to, like I said, make this FIFA International weekend the off week between the finals and MLS Cup.
Yeah, that's a great point and one I never thought of. You can't go to TFC and say, hey, play 3 more midweek matches where you're going to have crappy attendance because they're not going to make it up on the back end with a playoff match.
Well, I don't think attendance is the issue. I think we're at a point now where MLS teams could handle, attendance-wise, they could handle a couple more midweek games. The issue is condensing the calendar. The issue is if you cut too many literal weeks off the end of the season, then the season's too short. Mm-hmm. And from the beginning, we've heard people like Jurgen Klinsmann and apparently now Bruce Arena say, we have to play as long during the calendar as the leading nations of the world. I mean, that's how we're going to get our guys in a rhythm at the highest level of the game. So to cut it back further in order to accommodate the playoff games and the FIFA breaks is going to create a problem for those clubs that don't make the playoffs. So I'm just introducing the point to sort of make it clear that it's not as easy as people suggest. I mean, when Goss says in his article that MLS could observe all FIFA dates, I disagree. I think MLS can schedule games during friendly dates. A lot of leagues do that. And there's a difference between observing a friendly date and shutting down versus observing a date where there are qualifiers and shutting down. And obviously there are some years where there are a lot more qualifiers than others. 2015 is going to be a lot easier to handle than this year was because there's no HEX. So there are a lot of competing issues, and it's very, very difficult. And I don't want to sort of just say, oh, there's an easy solution here. I can't believe they haven't thought of it. They have thought of it, and they just kind of screwed up a little bit this time.
And I also, the only other thing I disagreed with in the Goff article was doing away with the 4-5 game. I think that adds a lot of excitement. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that's going to go around saying that there shouldn't be a playoffs. I'm not that guy. It's America. This is USA. We like our playoffs. And I think the playoffs have been really exciting for MLS. And I would hate to lose another game that it historically is an exciting game because both teams have to go for it.
Yeah, and I don't know that any league has ever sort of reduced the number of teams in the playoffs. I mean, maybe they're, you know, they're always sort of slowly adding. So I think now that it's here, you're going to be hard pressed to get the Board of Governors to eliminate two playoff spots. I just don't see it happening. My biggest disagreement with Goff's column was, and I've heard a couple people suggest it, and it's just one of those things. I can't even begin to guess the rationale behind it, which is one game playoffs, one game single elimination playoff rounds. That's insane to me. I mean, that reduces the playoff to a flip of a coin. It reduces it to a three-game sprint. That's a tiny percentage of the overall season. It makes the MLS championship something that's not hard to win. You get hot in two or three games, a red card, a crossbar, and you're out. To me, the whole point of a playoff is to test a team when the chips are down, when the opponent is good, when the stakes are high, all that kind of stuff. And it needs to be a trophy that's difficult and challenging to win. That's why the Stanley Cup is awesome, you know, because it's an absolute gauntlet, and it's grueling, and it's tough. And so to make the playoffs even easier to win, I think would undermine everything MLS has tried to do to create a trophy and a championship that's worth winning. So that's my biggest disagreement. That's why I initially proposed the group stage idea in the fall of 2010. I wanted to create a format that was both difficult and challenging to the eventual champion, but one that also rewarded regular season performance, which that one would do. Obviously, a home-and-home series is, by definition, leveling the playing field and not awarding a team for its regular season play.
Yeah, and Grant Wall, who we had on last week, your colleague, really went in-depth on that round-robin format. And I don't know if you proposed it in 2010 about the higher seed gets all three matches at home and the lower seed goes on the road for all three matches. I love that idea. I mean, just make that...
That was the proposal. The one wrinkle to the... I mean, this was a story I wrote sometime during the playoffs of 2010. It was back when I was at AOL. So if people out there are listening and are curious, you can Google. I think it was for AOL Fanhouse. And I think if you Google, like, MLS playoffs Fanhouse fix or something, it should come up. It's still living out there somewhere on the Huffington Post website. But that was the idea. And obviously by allowing a team to host all three group matches and then the second place team hosts two, you're giving the lower seed the real uphill climb in order to sort of move on through the playoffs. The one wrinkle that I didn't anticipate when I wrote that was the 4-5 game. And so if they wanted to keep that, it's pretty simple. You play that on the Wednesday following the conclusion of the regular season. The winner slots in as the fourth place team in each group. And then you start the group stage the following week.
Yep.
And it wouldn't take any longer to do that than it would now. But teams would have to play extra games. They'd have to negotiate a group stage. They'd have to negotiate a two-leg semifinal. Another one of my proposals is that if the higher seed team wins the first leg of the semi, the series is over. So it really gives the higher seed team an advantage and the opportunity to take advantage of its position and to get more rest ahead of the MLS Cup final. And to me, that's just it'll be tough to win. It'll be engaging. You can schedule the whole thing in advance, so it'll be a blessing to ticket salespeople at the clubs. And then I think it'll be something that'll capture the imagination. So that's my proposal. I know MLS, I love the fact that Grant has championed it. I know MLS has discussed it and voted it down, but I will... I'll keep writing about it. I think it's a good idea.
And speaking of writing, before we start talking about the expansions that have the expansion that happened this week and future expansions, give us the website where we can read all of your writings.
SI.com.
There you go. Pretty easy.
And we're on the main soccer page, and we're also on Planet Football, which is our new blog that we're churning stuff out. We finally got a guy in charge of all that, Avi Creditor, who your listeners may recognize as a longtime DC guy, worked for Soccer by Ibis for a long time and Goal.com, and he's been brilliant sort of, in the saddle in New York running things, and then Grant and I are out, churning out content, and Avi's doing some too. We got Alex Abnos as well. So it's we're taking flight, and we're starting to think about next summer and getting plans in shape, and it's pretty exciting.
So congratulations to Orlando City. The announcement came earlier this week that they will be MLS's 21st franchise beginning play in 2015 along with NYCFC. I tweeted this earlier, Brian. It's very unique. It's very ironic that both of those teams are coming at the same time because they couldn't be coming in under different circumstances. So I'll ask you, because I asked this on Twitter, because it occurred to me watching all the festivities in Orlando last night and just thinking to myself, wait a second, we didn't see any of this stuff for NYCFC, which is, of course, because they're a team that is just kind of being manufactured into existence as opposed to a team that's organically coming into existence. I know the pros and cons of both sides of an organic versus a manufactured and being in New York and all that other stuff. But what do you think the more important entry into MLS is right now, Orlando or NYCFC?
Important. That's a good question.
Thank you.
New York's New York. Yep. And I think Orlando was in because they proved themselves. So they came to MLS. MLS didn't come to them. The whole idea of organic and manufactured is interesting too, because there are other clubs in MLS that are manufactured, it is, so to speak, that are doing well. I mean, Real Salt Lake comes to mind. Philadelphia Union are very popular. So I think it's perhaps not as much about that as it is about sort of the whole clandestine under the radar nature that New York's NYCFC is doing things. I mean, they still haven't hired sort of PR people. They just hired, I think, in the last couple of weeks, a couple more front office people, someone to do sales and marketing and things like that. You can't get an interview with them. I mean, I've tried, and I haven't seen anyone else manage either. I mean, I've tried Claudio Reyna. I've tried higher up. I've failed over and over. It's quite humbling. They don't want to talk to the press. They don't want to talk about what they're doing. You hear little snippets from league sources about where their stadium push is, but you compare that to the way Phil Rollins and Flavio Da Silva conducted themselves in Orlando, which was out front, honest, forthcoming, easy to get a hold of. They'll answer your questions, and they delivered on everything they said they would do from day one. And I first talked to Phil, I think, in early 2012, and have stayed in touch with him, and I know a lot of other writers have as well, and we're so used in this country to sort of hearing bluster and promises and this and that. And credit to Orlando for, again, having the huevos to say what they wanted to do, to come out and be honest about it, and then to deliver. And it is frustrating to sort of see how quiet NYCFC is, except for when they've got, Cunagero, juggling on the High Line in Manhattan.
Well, exactly.
To me, that's
everything in a nutshell. And that's me having the little brother syndrome as an MLS fan, looking at Orlando's Twitter feed and just seeing all the excitement, the photographs, everything. And then seeing NYCFC's Twitter feed, which is, hey, Manchester City was here. We got some cool video. And it's like, okay, great. I don't really care about Manchester City. I care about NYCFC. What's going on with your club?
Well, they have nothing else. They have nothing else to put out there. I actually thought, I was talking to someone about that video, and I said, if you want to connect with New York, and some people think this might be cheesy, but you could have just as easily taken a bunch of youth players from around New York City. You could have taken guys who played for St. John's and Fordham and other area schools. I mean, you could have had sort of the continuum of New York City soccer culture. You could have found a guy who play in some of the old school leagues, that the Brooklyn Oval or whatever that's called, and put him in New York City FC t-shirts and had him do the same thing. So the fact that they chose Vincent Kompany, good players and all, well, you're right. I'm confused about what message it sends. I think a lot of people are confused about whether this team is going to be a New York City team or a Manchester City farm club. They're not doing a good job right now of sort of letting people know what they want to be. And they can look at a calendar and say, oh, 2015 is forever. But it's not. It's not forever. And people are curious. The fact that they want to know makes all of these questions valid and makes me wish that they were a bit more outgoing and forthcoming. And it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and so I think to answer my question, which would be which of the two expansion teams is more important? Yes, having a team in New York is important, but knowing that Miami is coming behind it, which I'll ask you about in a second, to me, Orlando is more important because it still says to other cities throughout the country that it's not all about glitz and glamour and biggest market. If you still do things the right way, and as you said, Brian, if you still go through all the steps to show that you are serious about getting an MLS team, that there is still a way in for you for that last slot, maybe last two slots. And then the other reason why I think it's just as important is because if those two teams coming in together, I hope that the enthusiasm, the exuberance, the joy that Orlando is having, being a franchise and coming in the same time as NYCFC, pushes NYCFC to go, oh boy, these guys are coming the same exact time we are. We don't want them stealing all of our thunder with their excitement. We need to do this, this, and this so that people are just as excited about us. And I think that's important as well.
I think it's a great point, and I also think NYCFC has to look to the Cosmos and some of the momentum they've
built.
They have to look to the Red Bulls, who have won a trophy. And I mean, the Red Bulls. I mean, the Red Bulls are a likable team now.
Yep.
Which, has that ever been true? You know? I mean, Mike Pecky has changed the culture of that club, at least on the outside. And yeah, I mean, they've got some work to do, and you wonder what's going on there. I don't know that they even have their own office yet. I mean, from what I understood, they were sort of, you know, huddled in a corner at the league office kind of doing their thing. You know, we're still not sure where they're going to play. We're still not sure where they're going to build. I mean, you know, at one point I heard that there's a I think it's a parking garage or something. There's a plot of land across the street from Yankee Stadium, which sort of emerged as the favorite location for them to build. And then the last time I heard something, maybe not, you know, I don't know that they're thinking about Queens again, but it's just everything's up in the air. They haven't even come out and said they're playing at Yankee Stadium as a temporary place since 2015. So, you know, at any point when there's a complete lack of news, when there's a blackout, it just kind of leaves everyone to sort of fill in the blanks and guess and speculate and wonder what's going on or lose interest. And I don't know how much momentum there's going to be for this club starting in 2015. I hope they sort of get some stuff together and start making some noise early next year. Maybe we'll find out about a coach soon. You know, who knows? But there needs to be something to sort of generate even a small percentage of the excitement that you're talking about with Orlando. And as for that last spot, that 24th spot, assuming that Miami and Atlanta are 22 and 23, it's going to be something organic. I mean, I like that. I like the fact that you see cities like Sacramento and San Antonio and Indianapolis starting sort of jockey to prove themselves and to build fan bases and build stadiums and put some roots down. And sort of they have a blueprint now established by Rollins and De Silva in Orlando to follow, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and that's why my hope is that 24th team is one of those organic clubs, because as you said, you're looking at 22 and 23. Let's look at Miami right now. Talk about a franchise that isn't even in existence yet, but has a lot of glitz and star power. What we're hearing is that the league has given David Beckham till the end of the year, December 31st, to make a play or make a bid. And that's a great question to start off with, Brian. Do you know the particulars of what he needs to do by December 31st? Does it just make his intentions known? Does he have to put an official bid in? Does he have to make an announcement? What has to happen for Miami to become a franchise?
My understanding of this term of the agreement is incomplete, and I don't know necessarily who negotiated it or who has the leverage here. Beckham wants in, and MLS wants Beckham, right? So
yeah.
it's not like anyone's got a hand, you know. So he can't just write them a $25 check. I'm sorry,
because he could do that.
He can't write them a $25 million check, and it's over. He has to abide by the same sort of expansion criteria that anyone else would, which is having a stadium plan. It doesn't mean there have to be shovels in the ground, but he has to have a plan in order for the Board of Governors to accept his bid. Now, I spoke to one person who said that it's not like when it hits midnight on December 31st, everything's over. You know, I mean,
okay,
this is something that both sides want to happen. If they renegotiate, if they extend the agreement, you know, maybe it becomes $30 million instead of 25 after December 31st. I don't see that date as a date at which suddenly their relationship and their potential partnership will dissolve and disappear. I am confused, and I haven't gotten an answer as to why the short timeline. I mean, he retired in May, right? So that gave him only 6 months to sort of put this entire thing together. And going back, and we just discussed it, took Orlando City 3 years. and it's probably easier to build in Orlando than in Miami. So I haven't really gotten an answer as to why sort of the whole timeline was so tight on this, and that leads me to believe that if something doesn't get worked out in December, that they'll find a way to extend it somehow because both sides want this.
Well, you know, the reason is because when he signed the deal, it was one of the situations, they had no idea that Orlando was going to pop up out of nowhere. They didn't know NYCFC was going to happen, which is kind of weird now because, okay, you're giving him to the end of 2013 to make his decision. Meanwhile, the team probably can't start the earliest till 2016. So why are you rushing him to make a decision 3 years before he actually has to put a team on the field?
Well, his option was always not good for New York. It was good for anywhere but New York.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding was that it kicked in once he retired. So, but again, my no one has really figured this out exactly, at least publicly, and I'm not sure what the specific terms were. But I do know he retired in May, and all of a sudden now he's got a December 31st deadline, which to me seems really tight to get all of this together. He's obviously working with Marcelo Claure, who has, you know, more money than God. And, you know, obviously now everyone is excited about the fact that, you know, he and LeBron have exchanged a few texts. And so, you know, he's got the pull, he's got the cash. The matter is working through a stadium site, and that's what he's gonna need in order to get the thumbs up from the Board of Governors. It's not enough to go to them and write them a check and say, yeah, we're going to play at FIU or Marlins Stadium, and then we're going to figure it out. MLS wants a plan. And once that plan's in place, they'll take his money.
I'll ask you two questions in this conversation that I asked Grant, so get a little repeat action here. And the first one is...
Well, it's going to be exciting for everybody.
I know. But it's a little more in focus now, especially after everything that's happened in the last week since we talked to Grant. You know, the first question is... How much easier would it be if Beckham just said, you know what, I'll put the team in Indianapolis rather than saying I have to have the team in the glitz and glamour of Miami?
Wow, what did Grant say to that?
He said it'd be easier to attract players to Miami. He wants to be in Miami because, you know, he's a glitz and glamour guy. I understand all the reasons why you want to be in Miami, but he could get a stadium deal done in one of these smaller markets in the United States just on his star power alone, that he could do it. That I don't think he can do it. He has as much juice if he was in Miami as he would in Indianapolis or San Antonio.
I suppose that's true. And without knowing exactly whether this is the case, I would say that the MLS Board of Governors might have something to say about that. Beckham afford the $25 million expansion fee? I mean, I guess between him and his wife, they probably got that, you know, in the couch cushions. But I don't know that he can afford to build a stadium. So he's going to need, he needs help. He needs a guy like Haré. He needs someone with just like Orlando City needed with Flavio Da Silva. I mean, you eventually need to bring in the 500 millionaire to sort of grease the skids and get this thing put up. And maybe Beckham doesn't attract that person if he wants to build in Indianapolis, no offense to Indianapolis. So I think part of it is that he's going to pick a place that appeals to him. He's got to pick a place that appeals to the league, so they sign off on it. And he's got to pick a place that appeals to a sort of an angel investor. And let's be clear about something. When people talk about the Southeast and put in, and can the league succeed in the Southeast, and are these pro sports towns, are these soccer towns, Atlanta and Miami are top 10 markets.
Yep.
Top 10. Two of the 10 largest markets in the country. And that's where MLS needs to be. That's where TV networks want to go. That's where corporate sponsors are. They're transportation hubs. There are a lot of things about those cities that make them appealing, even if some people think that all they care about is SEC football, you know? So the league wants to be in Miami and Atlanta for those reasons. And obviously in Atlanta, they have Arthur Blank. They have an owner and a stadium plan in place. But, you know, Beckham is the guy perhaps that can use that gravitas that you talked about to move the needle in Miami and get a stadium built so they can be in a city that, let's be honest, because of its size, because of its ties to Latin America, mm-hmm. is kind of a no-brainer for MLS.
So here's the second question that I asked Grant. So we talked about 23 teams. We talked about the jockeying for position for the 24th team. This is a huge country, but is it more than a 24 team league? Could it ever be more than a 24 team league, or is that 24th position really gold? Because I don't know if they could go any further on the expansion. What are your thoughts on a plus 24 MLS?
I think, well, I mean, the other major leagues have at least 30, right? NHL, NBA have 30, I think. NFL's with 32. I don't know how big baseball is, probably around there, probably 30, I guess. So that's perhaps a good sign of what this country can support in terms of a, quote-unquote, first division major sports league, so 30 teams. So do I recommend, you know, when we hit 24 in 2020 to start laying the roadmap for 30? Not necessarily, but I think that formula that I mentioned is always going to be there. I don't think when they hit 24, they're going to stop looking for that big-moneyed investor who can build a downtown stadium. I don't think that's going to stop. So in 2022, if, again, someone in Indianapolis, someone in San Antonio, someone in Oklahoma City, someone in Minneapolis or Detroit or Phoenix, or, I mean, let's pick the markets where there are major teams. If a St. Louis, obviously, if someone comes to the league and says, this is something I want to spend money on, I have a stadium plan, I can build a 20,000-seat soccer-specific stadium in a downtown area filled with, you know, these nuanced younger demographics that support pro soccer. Yeah, there's no way the league says, well, you know, we're stopping at 24, I think. I mean, they're always going to have their ears and eyes open for the kind of people that fill the criteria they have for good expansion. That's my thought. I just don't think we're going to see the same sort of roadmap we're seeing now to 24 in 2020. I think it's going to be more ad hoc. That's my guess.
Well, let's wrap it up with the most exciting thing that's happened in the last week, and that is men's national team friendlies.
Oh, my God. Well, you put me to sleep.
Now, here's the good news, and I did mention this with Grant before the matches started. Look, nothing was on the line. Nothing was at stake. The matches kind of felt that way, but it was good to be in that position. Right, Grant? Or right, Brian?
Right. Yes, as opposed to well, I don't know. Playing New Zealand could have been fun.
Yeah.
But No, it is. Yes, you want to be qualified. You want to be home free. You want to be sort of looking at these games to tinker and to, you know, it was hard to watch and try to get a sense of what players and variables Klinsmann was trying to isolate to sort of figure out. You know, he changed up formations. He used a couple guys in different places. He swore Jeff Cameron was the center back, and all of a sudden he was playing on the right. You know, we got to see, you know, Josie playing with different kinds of people behind him, Sasha and then Johansson and things like that. So he was clearly tinkering. But, yeah, I mean, they were tough to watch. And yesterday, my God, man, I mean, everyone is having a, you know, Ronaldo-gasm. And I'm
what are you doing?
I'm forced to watch that Snoozefest in Vienna and come up with a story to write. I was very, very angry yesterday. Everyone was enjoying soccer with me. I certainly don't blame Jurgen for scheduling the games. He had the window. He took the guys over there he could. Obviously, would it have been great to have seen Dempsey and Donovan and Fabian Johnson and Graham Zusi and all those guys? Yeah, of course. So he did what he could, but I can't imagine he got much out of those games. You know, I continue to be a little bit stressed by Jermaine Jones. I know a lot of people are. I continue to think that this team functions a lot better when there's a bit more space in midfield and when roles in midfield are better defined. You know, Bradley and Jermaine Jones were both sort of up and back yesterday. Johansson was often in the way. Kleston was often in the way against Scotland. And when this team spreads out a little bit more, when Josie has someone to play off of, when Michael has room to make decisions in midfield, proactive decisions, I just think this is a better team. And so I hope that's something that Klinsmann has noticed over the past few games. And if that's the case, then maybe we'll look back at these games and say they were worth playing. But yeah, they were tough to watch. And obviously, you know, two straight shutouts to end the year is not going to make anyone feel good.
We liked what we saw from Johansson generally in his run this fall with the men's national team. There's no chance that Klinsmann changes his formations as we get ready for World Cup preparation. So is the best that we can hope for, which, by the way, isn't a bad thing, just a guy with a goal-sniffing, goal-poaching mentality off the bench for the final 30 minutes, down a goal for World Cup?
Well, see, but to me, that's Eddie Johnson. That's the thing. I don't. If you want a guy who's gonna run at a player and crash the penalty area with 20 minutes to go, EJ is my guy. You know, he's on the team for that reason. And then if for some reason he gets hurt or slips out of form or goes crazy or whatever, you know, you got a guy like Chris Wondolowski or maybe even Herc, someone like that. I think there's just so many questions about the best way to put this team out on the field. And I love what Johansson does inside the penalty area. I feel like he's the one guy on this team who could, you know, he can beat a defender one-on-one in tight space and create his own shot. And that just can't be underestimated, how important that is. And so, and Josie plays better with some support. Mm-hmm. I mean, that can't be denied. So you start thinking about putting Johansson up with Josie. Where does Quinn Dempsey play then? You know, do you shift Dempsey back out wide where Bradley used to play him, but that Clint didn't really like to play? You know, that means only, you know, that means Zusi and Donovan are fighting for one spot. And so there's a domino effect on this decision and the permutation that they're making me dizzy right now just thinking about this. I mean, there's a lot of ways that the dominoes could fall. And I think it's Klinsmann's job to, you know, get his best players on the field and put them in positions they're comfortable with. I know Johansson plays withdrawn sometimes for AZ, but, you know, in that crowded midfield, it just didn't look like he had enough time and enough room to really be effective. I mean, if he beats a guy 30 yards from goal, he's still 30 yards from goal, you know, and Josie's up there trying to occupy the center backs and, you know, Preche is over, you know, making doodles on the sideline. I mean, it just never worked. So there's a lot to figure out between now and the World Cup. And I wrote my story, you know, my preview that for all this team's accomplished this year, and it's accomplished an enormous amount in terms of people finding, you know, getting on the same page together, starting to really have a sense of what Jurgen was about, you know, creating depth at a lot of different positions, getting these guys to really believe that they can compete with the top teams in the world. I mean, that's all genuine, and that's all happened over the past, you know, 10 months. But what's your World Cup 11, you know? How do you want to line up? How do you want to step out in your first game against Brazil? You know, there are just so many questions left unanswered for all this team's accomplished, and you know, there's not enough time left. I mean, there's one FIFA date between now and the World Cup, and Jurgen still got a lot of work to do as far as I'm concerned.
We were supposed to do this in person. Everybody loved our last encounter when we sat in a bar and just did it.
Did they really?
Yes, totally.
That was so much fun. I guess it was the interludes with the waiter.
Yes.
And then the awkward point, I guess, where Susan came over and took my food and then wanted to leave.
It was a great time. And we were setting it up to do it again tonight. And then I got picked for jury duty and we weren't able to do it. So we had to do it over the phone.
You're a good citizen. Well, maybe we can do a post. Post MLS Cup throwdown.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So next time, yeah. Brian, we got to do it in person. Maybe we'll invite a couple of other soccer guys to do it with us. We'll have a little round table. How's that sound?
That would be amazing, man. There's certainly enough of them in this town.
Totally.
We should do that. That would be great.
Totally.
It's exciting. I'm looking forward to the final. Obviously, we don't know if we're going to Salt Lake or KC or Portland, but you know, all three of those markets to me kind of represent what's possible in this league. I mean, I know Kansas City's not an expansion team, but they kind of are in a way. And so you've seen three cities that have really embraced their club because those clubs are well run. And so whether you're Miami or you're Orlando or you're Atlanta or you're Sacramento or any of these cities, you can look at these teams as models of what's possible if you do things right. And you can generate some traction and really generate some passion. And so I'm excited about the fact that one of these three teams will host MLS Cup.
SI.com for everything Brian Strauss. I love the Planet Football blog. Brian, you, Avi Grant, doing a great job putting content on there, so make sure you check that out. Brian Strauss, we'll catch up with you, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.